at the end of The Death of Crazy Horse. I was crying so hard when I wrote it, I couldn't finish it. I couldn't put the lines down, and I don't cry. But I couldn't get the lines down. I was shaking all over as though I were having a chill. And I got up and ran around the house a couple of times and came back and couldn't do it. And ran around the house again and came back. And then I put it down and got it, my hand still, so I could write it. And I found the manuscript. Oh, probably 15 years later, I found the manuscript in the Western Manuscripts collection. And on the left-hand lower corner of the manuscript was written, "Thanks." I'd forgotten it. I wrote "Thanks" because I thought it was too damn good for me in a normal state of mind. It was so simple, and yet it made you want to cry. The Crazy Horse was killed September 1877. It was 4 years yet before I'd be born. Just 4 years. But I was within 4 years of Crazy Horse. And of course, at the time I was born, he was a devil. You know, if anybody, they heard Sitting Bull more than they did Crazy Horse. Crazy Horse wasn't famous then like he is now. It was Sitting Bull. Everybody knew Sitting Bull, and he sat at the Buffalo Bill show, and he'd write his name. He'd been taught to write his name. He didn't know what he was writing. Sitting Bull, you know. Get $1 a signature. He's making money fast, and I thought, the damn fool white men, they'll give you $1 for that, you know. Sitting Bull is the big name, not Crazy Horse. Crazy Horse, that's a fad now. It's come on fashion. Back there told me he was a strange man, very strange, and he'd walk along and wouldn't notice anybody. He was thinking about something, they say, planning something, thinking something. But if a little kid would come along, he'd reach down and pet the kid and talk to it. Or if a dog would come along, he'd pet the dog and talk to the dog. He was a damn good guy, I bet you. When they went on war parties, he'd sing with his men, and they'd ride along singing together, you know. And he would tell funny stories when he was riding with his warriors going to a battle. He'd tell funny stories so they'd laugh, you know, and have a good time before they went, you know. Take away any little fears they had, you know. No, he was a great man. He was about the age of Jesus, you know. That's the surprising thing. So was Jed Smith. That seems to be a crucial point for the great spirits, great men. There are three of them right there. They're in their 30s, right close together. Jesus, and Jed Smith, Crazy Horse. After the Custer fight, the Sioux retired to the Bighorn Mountains, and there in the lush valleys, they spent the rest of the summer having victory dances and kill talks and enjoying themselves generally over their great victory. Then in the fall, they heard that a strong body of troops was being formed south of them under Crook, and one under Terry on the Yellowstone to the north, and that these were coming together like a nutcracker. So they started, Crazy Horse and Sitting Bull, several of them, started to retreat northwest into Canada, the east and north to Canada. They always felt safer in Canada because the British were kinder to their Indians than we were. But when they reached the headwaters of the Heart River in what is now North Dakota, the Crazy Horse's people became homesick, and they wanted to go back. They had burned the prairie behind them 150 miles wide so that the cavalry horses would have no food in pursuit. Now they said that the country is back and that there's no food in the country, and the buffalo are gone. Maybe the white men will leave them alone if they just go back into their own country on the Tongue River. So they did start back, And at Slim Buttes in western South Dakota, northwestern South Dakota, they encountered the 7th Cavalry again. And they fought all day in the rain at Slim Buttes. And then they fled to the Tongue River. And there on January 8th, 1881, in a bitter cold winter, General Miles came with a body of finely equipped foot soldiers, had long, warm overcoats, and they attacked. It's a dirty trick, you know. General Miles did it. Dirty trick. To attack those poor devils, you know, living in teepees, strike them in blizzard weather. Punish the women and children and everybody. General Miles, that was his plan. To attack to carry the campaign into the winter so that the Indians would die of starvation and cold. It was a dirty trick. Crazy Horse's people had little or no ammunition, and their guns had been given up anyway, so they couldn't have fought a battle. But they fought with gun butts and clubs, while the women fled with the children and the ponies. And they fled, a blizzard came on during the battle, and they fled during this blizzard down to the little Powder River, 150 miles south. And there they camped for the rest of the winter, starving. But during the late winter, Spotted Tail, who was the uncle of Crazy Horse, came up trying to induce his nephew to surrender. Because he was wise, he said, you can't whip these people. There's a river of them coming. They're exhaustless. They're more than the leaves on the trees or the grasshoppers. You can't stop them. Make the best peace you can, because you can't do any better than that. We can't afford all of us to die. We can't all die. If we could, it'd be all right, but we can't. We can't all die. Some of us have to live. And we must make the best deal possible with the white men. You know, he was brave. He was the man who offered himself instead of his brulees. He went they sent a force out there to punish the brulees for their depredations on the Platte. When the old Spotted Tail was out on the Platte River, you know, burning covered wagons, burning camps of white men and ranch houses and homes. Spotted Tail was a hellion, you know, when he was out there. And instead of letting his people be punished, he went dressed for death and went to the soldiers and said, "Here I am, I ordered it. Don't punish them, I told them to do it. Punish me, here I am." They put him in jail. He was in jail for, I think, 2 years or 3 years. Oh, he was a man. Spotted Tail was a man. It just, we would be very proud of him and Crazy Horse if he belonged to our history. 2 winters he was there. Had him in jail. They loved him, you know. The young men follow him. They charged many times with Spotted Tail leading them. Hokahay, hokahay. Yes, sir. He said in the spring, a powerful military forces will come against them, and also many Indians are turning against him. And he said, "Well, now what could Crazy Horse's people do against them all?" Said Spotted Tail the Wise. And with the ancient question in his eyes that only time may riddle, gazing long now first upon the fat one in the wrong, Spotted Tail was fat with white men's food, he'd surrendered. The other found an answer. "I could fight, and I could fight till all of us were dead. But now I have no powder left," he said. "I cannot fight. Tell Grey Fox what you saw, that I am only waiting for a thaw to bring my people in." And he did come in early in the springtime and surrender to the United States forces at Fort Robinson in what is now northwestern Nebraska. And there he was a prisoner all summer, although he was allowed to roam over the grounds, the fort grounds. But during the summer, a rumor floated about the fort to the effect that Crazy Horse was still dangerous, and that he was going to be arrested and imprisoned in the Dry Tortugas off Florida, imprisoned for life. And he heard this rumor. Probably some of his followers got it from some of the Indians hanging around the fort. He heard this rumor, so he fled in the night with his people to the camp of his uncle, Spotted Tail, which was about 20 miles away. He thought, just like a boy going to see his uncle, he was worried. He thought maybe he'd be safer with his uncle. He didn't want to fight. He wanted peace. And so they sent out troopers to look for him. They're afraid that they would base a new revolt on him, you know. They'd use him as the spear point of a new revolt of the Sioux. And they could have done it. The other Sioux that had some weapons could do it. Brulees and Hunk Papas. Sitting Bull, you know, for a while they thought he was going to start out again. So they sent a squad out to look for Crazy Horse, see where he'd gone. And they found him in the camp of Spotted Tail. That's where we begin to tell about his death. Up and down the dusty autumn, panic horsemen spurred, till all the border shuddered at the word of how that terror threatened every trail. They found him in the camp of Spotted Tail, a lonely figure with a face of care. "I am afraid of what might happen there," he said. "So many listen when I say, and look. I will not run away. I want my people here. You have my guns." But half a world away, that's down in Washington, but half a world away, the mighty ones had spoken words like bullets in the dark that wreak the rage of blindness on a mark they cannot know. Then spoke the one who led the soldiers, "Not a hair upon your head shall suffer any harm if you will go to Robinson for just a day or so and have a parley with the soldier chief." He spoke believing, and he won belief. So Crazy Horse went riding down the west, and neither he nor any trooper guessed what doom now made a rutted wagon road the highway to a happier abode, where all the dead are splendidly alive, and summer lingers, and the bison thrive forever. If the better hope be true, there was a gate of glory yawning through the sunset when the little cavalcade approached the fort. The populous parade, the straining hush that somehow wasn't peace, the bristling troops, the Indian police drawn up as for a battle. What was wrong? What made them hustle Crazy Horse along among the gleaming bayonets and eyes? There swept a look of quizzical surprise across his face. He struggled with the guard. Their grips were steel. Their eyes were cold and hard like bayonets. There was a door flung wide. The soldier chief would talk with him inside and all be well at last. The stifling, dim interior poured terror over him. He glanced about and saw the iron bars. Oh, nevermore to neighbor with the stars or know the simple goodness of the sun. Did some swift vision of a doom begun reveal the monstrous purpose of a lie? The desert island and the alien sky, the long and lonely ebbing of a life. The glimmer of a whipped-out butcher knife dismayed the shrinking squad, and once again men saw a face that many better men had died to see. Brown arms that once were kind, a comrade's arms, swept round him from behind, went crimson with a gash and dropped aside. "Don't touch me, I am Crazy Horse," he cried, and leaping doorward, charged upon the world to meet the end. A frightened soldier hurled his weight behind a jabbing belly thrust, and Crazy Horse plunged headlong in the dust, a writhing heap. The momentary din of struggle ceased. The people closing in went ominously silent for a space, and one could hear men breathing round the place where lay the mighty. Now he strove to rise, the wide, blind stare of anguish in his eyes, and someone shouted, "Kill that devil quick!" A throaty murmur and a running click of gun locks woke among the crowding Sioux, and many a soldier whitened. Well they knew what pent-up hate the moment might release, to drop upon the bungled farce of peace a bloody curtain. One began to talk. It was the commandant of the fort. One began to talk. His tongue was drunken and his face was chalk. But when a half-breed shouted what he spoke, the crowd believed. So few had seen the stroke, nor was there any bleeding of the wound. It seemed the chief had fallen sick and swooned. Perhaps a little rest would make him strong. And silently they watched him borne along, a sagging bundle, dear and mighty yet, though from the sharp face, beaded with the sweat of agony, already peered the ghost. They laid him in an office of the post, and soldiers, forming in a hollow square, kept back the people. Silence deepened there. A little while it seemed the man was dead. He lay so still. The West no longer bled. Among the crowd the dusk began to creep. Then suddenly, as startled out of sleep by some old dream remembered night alarm, he strove to shout, half rose upon an arm, and glared about him in the lamp-lit place. The flare across the ashes of his face went out. He spoke, and leaning where he lay, men strained to gather what he strove to say, so hard the panting labor of his words. "I had my village and my pony herds on Powder, where the land was all my own. I only wanted to be let alone. I did not want to fight. The Gray Fox," that's General Crook, "the Gray Fox sent his soldiers. We were poorer when they went. Our babies died, for many lodges burned and it was cold. We hoped again and turned our faces westward. It was just the same out yonder on the Rosebud. Gray Fox came. The dust his soldiers made was high and long. I fought him and I whipped him. Was it wrong to drive him back? That country was my own. I only wanted to be let alone. I did not want to see my people die. They say I murdered long hair. That's Custer. They say I murdered long hair, and they lie. His soldiers came to kill us, and they died. He choked and shivered, staring hungry-eyed, as though to make the most of little light. Then, like a child who feels the clutching night and cries the wilder, deeming it in vain, he raised a voice made lyrical with pain and terror of a thing about to be. I want to see you, Father, come to me. I want to see you, Mother. O'er and o'er his voice assailed the darkness at the door, and from the gloom beyond the hollow square of soldiers quavered voices of despair. We cannot come. They will not let us come. But when at length the lyric voice was dumb and Crazy Horse was nothing but a name, there was a little withered woman came behind a bent old man. Their eyes were dim. They sat beside the boy and fondled him, remembering the little names he knew before the great dream took him and he grew to be so mighty. And the woman pressed a hand that men had feared against her breast and swayed and sang a little sleepy song. Out yonder in the village all night long there was a sound of mourning in the dark. And when the morning heard the meadowlark, the last great Sioux rode silently away. Before the pony drag on which he lay, an old man tottered, bowed above the bier, a little withered woman kept the rear without a sound and nothing in her eyes. Who knows the crumbling summit where he lies alone among the badlands? Coyotes prowl about it, and the voices of the owl assume the day-long sorrow of the crows. These many grasses and these many snows. Down in Washington, they got to talking about it, and they thought, well, as long as he's there, he's a firebrand, he'll encourage them to revolt. And whether he can get away or not, he can encourage the rest. And so they were going to arrest him. I got it from Lemley, and he's pretty good witness. They were going to take him down over to, there were orders to take him over to Cheyenne and put him on the Union Pacific, ship him east, and then take him down to the Dry Tortugas. Yes, it was a plan. The dirty devils, they didn't understand an Indian any more than they would understand a rattlesnake, you know. That's the trouble, there was no understanding. Lemley was the voice of Crook. Crook knew. Crook was at the post. Crook was either at the post or had been there or would be there soon. Anyway, that was his headquarters. And Lemley was his adjutant. Lemley, of course, was his voice. The general gives his orders to the adjutant, and the adjutant sees it, they're executed. And so he got the lowdown from Crook, you can bet your head on that, because he thought it was awful, terrible. after telling him that he wouldn't have a hair on his head harmed if he'd come along, and here they were putting him in jail. The sergeant who brought the squad up there and located him, they sent a squad out to look for him, see where he was. And he says, "Smoke believing, anyone believe." They probably didn't tell him the secret. They just swear they want to know where Crazy Horse went. Yeah, want to talk to him, sure. And the crook, you know, he said, "I never knew a white man to keep a treaty. I never knew an Indian to break one. Thank you." This was the common saying in upper circles. A good Indian is a dead Indian. The best Indian is a dead Indian. That was taken for granted in Washington, all over the West. A good Indian is a dead Indian. You bet your life. Sherman, his policy was to annihilate them. Annihilate the Indians. Rub them out as a people. Genocide. Kill them. That was his plan. His policy was to kill them. And as far as massacres are concerned, God Almighty, there are plenty of massacres, you know, that Sand Creek was a terrible massacre of Cheyennes living peacefully. There was a preacher who commanded soldiers. He had been a preacher. Nobody understood Indians. Nobody. Indians were dangerous. They killed white people. Of course they did. No, the Indian was, you think of an Indian now as a person in a time of peace. But the Indian then, the good Indian was a dead Indian. That was the common saying everywhere. Among white men, that was the saying. That was the belief about Indians. The best Indian is a dead Indian. That was the dominant saying. God, that's the point. And the misunderstanding between the man and the snake is the same thing. It's the same thing. The lack of realization that the other fellow was a person too, was human. They couldn't believe it, because they were frightened. Fear, you know, is the devil. But the people out west who were afraid of Indians had these ideas about them, and they didn't penetrate to the Brahmins of Boston. The Brahmins of Boston thought of them as very human and highly idealized people. They were right up against the Indian, and our soldiers and our pioneers were up against the Indian, and he was dangerous. They made him dangerous. They were taking away everything that belonged to him. See, the Indians weren't there. They were way out 1,000 miles west. And they could be idealistic about Indians, because it wasn't all... the Indians weren't all right either. They were human beings, and they were afraid of the white men, and the white men were stealing from them. They weren't very nice either. They were dangerous. They killed lots of people. You know, the idealistic Brahmin, highly educated person of the East, you know, who had ideals of what Indians were supposed to be like, the noble red man. You know, there never was such an animal. There were fine Indians and there were scamps. They burned wagon trains and burned homes and haystacks and... No, you can't idealize the Indian either, because he's a human being. But he is human. He was human. Same as with white people. They're not all bad. The white race isn't a race of cutthroats. And they're good men. They're good and they're bad men. They do both. There are two sides to all questions. No doubt there are two sides to this question, but my heart is with the Sioux.